Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Cigarette smoking has been on the decline for years, and young people have been slow to take up the habit. A recent UNC Charlotte study shows that young people are smoking fewer cigarettes than ever before. Just 3% of respondents had smoked cigarettes, but the study also discovered something else, a 17% rise in just 1 year in the number of young people using electronic cigarettes. The popularity of Juul, that's a brand name, J-U-U-L, and other e-cigarettes are leading the FDA to characterize this rise as a new epidemic. Juul makes up about three-quarters of the e-cig market and is valued at over $15 billion as a company. A single Juul pod, which offers about 200 puffs, contains as much nicotine as a pack of cigarettes, and studies show that teens who have taken up vaping are four times more likely to try cigarettes. That is leading officials to consider tightening regulations on these cigarette alternatives. What are the risks? What regulations are being considered? We look into that this hour with Dr. Walid El-Terabursi, a pulmonology specialist at Trion Medical Partners. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike.
He joins us in our Spirit Square studio along with Sandra Burke, a retired cardiovascular researcher and board member of the American Heart Association. Welcome.
Good morning. Welcome. Thanks for having us.
Nice to see you. Welcome. And also with us by phone is Rose Hoban. She's a reporter with North Carolina Health News. Rose, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we asked Juul to provide a representative of the program. They were unable to do so, but they did this morning send in a statement, parts of which I will share with you as we go through this program. We also invited others in the industry, both manufacturers and retailers, to join us. None accepted our invitation. So, Rose, let me begin with you. For those who may be unaware, have no idea what we're talking about, exactly what is an electronic cigarette? What is vaping?
Well, electronic cigarettes are these devices that allow folks to inhale aerosolized liquid. A lot of people call it vaping juice that might contain everything from simply just a scent or a flavor all the way up to nicotine. It's a little bit of a Wild West right now, because there have been these devices that, I don't know, they kind of almost look steampunkish, and they make lots and lots of vapor floating around. You see folks who are vaping kind of sometimes have like a cloud of vapor. And that was sort of the older group of vaping devices. And then several traditional cigarette manufacturers came out with things like Blue, or other types of things that actually looked like cigarettes. They were long and cylindrical and about the same size and shape as a traditional cigarette. And then most recently, these Juul things that really look a lot like a USB flash drive. And that's been the big concern in schools, because, you know, kids have them and they look like they're a USB flash drive, and they charge that way. But they're actually devices for their nicotine delivery device.
So Juul is one brand name. There are lots of different brands. And I mentioned a Juul pod, but I think that's not exclusive to Juul. I think that's, they may call them other things, and they may look different from brand to brand, but essentially it's the container that has the juice in it that gets aerosolized electronically in these devices. And that's the fragrance or the other ingredients that you may get when you are vaping. It's in that pod, correct?
Yes. Well, some devices use pods, like Juul. Mm-hmm. Some of the earlier vaping devices, you actually buy like a little bottle. Maybe it's got 1 or 2 milliliters of nicotine juice, and each drop might have multiple milligrams of nicotine in it. So when you see these vape shops, sometimes that's part of what you can go in and buy. They're like little dropper bottles, and you put the juice into your vaping device. So it comes in you can get the juice in more than one way.
Yeah, we did a program on this several years ago, and somebody from a vape shop brought in a bunch of different flavors and opened them in the studio. And I'm gonna tell you, the fragrance takes over very quickly, and it didn't help that he dropped one and and spilled it. So it smelled like that in here for quite a while. Is vaping all about nicotine delivery, or do people use these devices and this material for other reasons, just for flavor purposes, for instance?
Depends on who you ask.
Okay.
I think some folks in the industry would say, oh, no, a lot of it is just for, you know, recreation, it's flavor, blah, blah, blah. But again, a lot of it's really Wild West. So sometimes you don't know how much nicotine is in some of the flavors, especially when you buy the little bottles, because there's not really stringent regulations.
So go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I think in general, these are nicotine delivery devices, though.
So is this something who does this? Is this primarily young people? Is it teenagers? Is it young adults? Does it span the spectrum? Anybody who maybe would be inclined to smoke or maybe used to smoke or is trying to stop smoking, who's using these things?
Again, all of the above. There's a lot of folks who really promote the use of e-cigarettes and vaping as a way to transition from combustible cigarettes over to something that might be less harmful, but still help them deliver nicotine. There's been a lot of talk that vaping devices are a transition to help folks who've been addicted to nicotine cigarettes to transition away and maybe to quit, but the evidence is spotty on that. Actually, the British National Health System came out, and they didn't come out necessarily in favor of vaping, but they said that if you need to have nicotine, that this is a preferable way of getting it over combustible cigarettes. And a lot of folks in the vaping community point to the British decision about that. But there's a lot of folks who are using them who had not been smokers, and that's what we're talking, I think, primarily about teens today. I'm surprised that you said that in Charlotte the data showed that about 17% of students were using vaping devices. A statewide survey called the Youth Tobacco Survey that they do every 2 years. The State Department of Health and Human Services does that in conjunction with the Centers for Disease Control. They found that kids in 2017, it was 24.5% of middle and high school students had current use of cigarettes and emerging tobacco products. So there's a lot of kids using these things.
So we have made it very uncomfortable for smokers to indulge in their habit in public places. You can't smoke in restaurants. You can't smoke indoors for the most part. You can't smoke
I'm sorry. I'm having trouble hearing you, Mike.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
No, I'm sorry. You've faded away.
Okay. Let me bring in some other guests, and they'll fix that at the studio side of things here, because evidently there's something going on with the phones that we don't know about on our side here at Spirit Square. So let me bring back into the conversation, or for the first time into the conversation, Dr. Walid Eltarabulsi, who is a pulmonologist with Trium Medical Partners, and Rose and Sandra Burke, cardiovascular researcher and a member of the American Heart Association. We've made it very difficult for smokers to smoke because of regulations. Can you use these devices, Sandra, where you can't smoke? In other words, can you sit in your office if it's a no-smoking building and vape?
Apparently, a number of people are doing so. However, it is recommended that you do not vape in some of these places because people object to being exposed to this vapor. So I think that it's an open question. It's the jury's still out on that. It depends really where you are.
Can you vape in an airplane, or do you know?
I do know that you cannot vape in an airplane, having been on an airplane yesterday and heard the flight attendant again, saying that there is no smoking nor the use of e-cigarettes.
Ah, okay.
Literally, that was said.
A study published last month by Duke and Yale University researchers raised concerns about the negative impacts of vaping. The study shows that flavor additives create chemical compounds that irritate and inflame lungs when inhaled. Are those effects worse than how smoking a cigarette or a cigar or a pipe would impact you, Doctor?
Sure, Mike. The study was looking specifically at a new compound that was found from specifically from e-cigarettes, diacetyl compounds, which have shown to cause a sort of inflammation. We call, given a name, popcorn lung. So
that doesn't sound good. What does that mean?
It's a sort of inflammation different from what is caused by cigarette smoke. It's a reversible condition. The answer is there are diseases that we are finding with the e-cigarettes, and there are diseases that we are concerned we may find with e-cigarettes. And so there's still deliberation about really how harmless they are. So I believe Rose brought it up that the British Society has already released that they feel it is less harmful than tobacco cigarettes.
So let's be clear here, because there's virtually no regulation on these things at the moment, although it's about to happen.
It is.
But these have been around since about 2003. I think they started in 2003 in China. And then they came here, and we've done, several years ago we did a program on this, and we just talked about why people were attracted to it, not what the health effects were, but now people are becoming concerned about these health effects. Is it unusual for a product that you at least ingest to a degree not to be regulated, or for us not to know precisely what's in a product that we are bringing into our bodies? Is that unusual in the United States, or is that particular to this industry?
Well, I think it's somewhat unusual. The American Heart Association and others, American Cancer Society, American Lung Association, have been very clear that there are a lot of concerns here and that the companies are not following the regulations that do exist. And there are some that the FDA has put in place, but a number of these newer companies are not adhering to them. And that's one of the major concerns.
Is irritation and inflammation, which we just talked about, mm-hmm. the only negative side effect that we know about or that we've been able to document when it comes to people who vape on a regular basis, or are there other things?
I think there are other things. You know, I mentioned that I was on a plane yesterday, and the reason I was on a plane, I was returning literally from the American Heart Association's scientific sessions. They are held every November in various cities. This year they were in Chicago. And I saw some of the truly cutting-edge science that's coming out about these. There was an interesting study that examined, and I'll get a little scientific here, but not too much for your audience, I think. This study examined what are called endothelial cells, and Dr. E will know exactly what I'm talking about. These are delicate cells which line our arteries, the arteries of all of us, and they produce a number of beneficial substances. These cells are not only barriers to the underlying tissues, they actually are little factories, if you will, that produce a lot of beneficial substances, including nitric oxide. Mm-hmm. Nitric oxide is a molecule that helps blood vessels, keep them healthy, et cetera. And this study showed a detrimental effect on the production of nitric oxide. I'll tell you more later.
Okay. We'll come back with that in a moment. Sandra Burke is here with the American Heart Association and a cardiovascular researcher. Dr. Walid El-Tarabulsi with us, a pulmonologist, and Rose Hoban with NC Health News. It's Charlotte Talks. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the possible health, detrimental health effects of vaping or the use of electronic cigarettes with Dr. Walid El-Terabousi, pulmonologist with Trion Medical Partners, Dr. Sandra Burke, cardiovascular researcher and a board member of the American Heart Association, and Rose Hoban, reporter with NC Health News. Smoke, the word smoke and the word smoking, has they've become kind of a dirty word in our society today. And smoke has negative connotation. You know, you wouldn't go to a campfire necessarily and just breathe in the smoke. That would be, you know, intrinsically that that's not going to be good for you. But the word vapor, now that doesn't have any. That's steam. That's water coming off a pot of macaroni being cooked on the stove. There's nothing wrong with that. So vapor has a nice positive connotation. Is that part of the problem here?
I think so, Mike. So you bring up a great point, and there is a public perception that vaping is less harmful than tobacco combustible cigarettes. So the research is still ongoing, and I think to make a final statement is going to be very preliminary at this point. If you look at the British Society, they feel strongly enough that these vaporized particles are less harmful and have actually given it as an alternative to for people who are interested in quitting smoking as an alternative to combustible
cigarettes. What if you don't inhale this stuff? What if you just like the flavor of it or you like the smell of it around you and you don't inhale it, you just puff on it to extract the vapor and then release it? Is that harmful or do we know?
Go ahead.
No, oh, please. Okay, please. I don't think we know. However, there was a study that showed that the buccal mucosa, let me tell you what that is, the inner linings of the cheeks, basically, mm-hmm. have receptors that can absorb some of this vapor, and therefore you would still get it into your bloodstream.
Because people who smoke pipes don't inhale it. People who smoke cigars don't inhale it. They just like the flavor of it. But we know that they can get cancer from smoking these things. Could the same be true? Do we know, or could the same be true of vaping?
The research is much too preliminary to say that. We don't know that. But that's one of the problems. Because we don't know so many things about these products and about the substances that they contain, there's a great concern. And we need to do whatever we can to eliminate exposure. On something that we don't know a lot about.
So when you're vaping and you're sucking this stuff into your lungs, you're the pulmonologist here, what's going on in your lungs? Because your lungs want air. They want oxygen, right?
That's right.
So when you're tainting the oxygen, even if it's pleasant, with something else, how is that different from the aromas you get from Thanksgiving meals? The whole house fills with turkey. And that's one of the things people like. Anything about food, they love the smell of it. How is vaping, which has a nice odor to it in some cases, how is that different?
So at this point, the thing that's of most concern, I think, for most healthcare professionals is the nicotine delivery. So what we do know is that when you're inhaling these scents, these fragrances, you're also inhaling nicotine. And so when you're inhaling nicotine and that gets into the bloodstream, you're releasing a cascade of reactions. Of those reactions, you're stimulating your adrenal glands to release epinephrine, which raises your blood pressure, increases your heart rate. You're stimulating brain receptors to release dopamine, which encourages the brain after certain intervals into addiction. And one of the major concerns is really this epidemic, as you called it at the beginning of the show, in the teenage population who have developing minds and developing brains, and this release of dopamine is impairing certain learning and behavior aspects of a developing mind. Mm-hmm. And one of the concerns is really we know that nicotine results in problems with impulse control for these young and developing adults.
I think Rose Hoban can hear me. I hope she can. Rose Hoban is a reporter. Okay, with North Carolina Health News. Do all of these various brands of e-cigarette pod manufacturers, because it's not just the device, it's the actual thing that you put in the device, do they all contain nicotine, or are some of them just there for flavor and aroma?
From what I understand, I think most of them do contain nicotine. Pod-wise. I think when you go to a vape shop and you can buy stuff that's just aroma and no nicotine. But again, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of this stuff is not terribly well regulated, so it's hard to know exactly what is in them. When we've gone out and done reporting on the pods, we've found that you can buy Juul, that one brand pod, in gas stations and convenience stores and whatnot. But there's also now other manufacturers who are making off-label pods that fit the Juul. And I think ostensibly all of those have nicotine in them.
Okay. Let's talk about nicotine for a second. We all know it's in cigarettes. We all know it's the American Heart Association calls nicotine a dangerous and highly addictive chemical.
And they're not alone. There are a number of organizations and groups who know that very clearly.
And it's dangerous because of what you were talking about, Doctor, what it does to your blood pressure and your blood vessels and things like that. Nicotine is a stimulant, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Caffeine is a stimulant. Caffeine is in Coca-Cola. It's in a lot of different soda drinks that young people and young adults and everybody consumes. Is there a fundamental difference between nicotine that you would take in through a cigarette or vaping or some other way, gum, and caffeine, which you get in a drink?
I think there is, yes.
What's the difference?
The nicotine is probably the most highly addictive substance known. It's even more highly addictive, and you can Google this and find out for yourself, and your listeners can too, even more highly addictive in some cases than heroin or cocaine. So, and we can certainly not say that caffeine found in Coca-Cola or whatever other...
Well, sugar is also a stimulant, and I've been told that if sugar came on the market today, it would be banned.
Perhaps.
Is nicotine more dangerous for young adults and teens than it is for adults, or is it pretty much the same?
That is our concern, is that you have, we know that connections within the brain are forming and continue to form until the age of 25. So we are concerned that bringing in a new population of nicotine addiction to teenagers and young adults will impair those developing minds and lead to other behavioral issues and problems.
And the American Heart Association, to get back to your organization, mm-hmm. says mm-hmm. there is no such thing as a risk-free tobacco product. That we've already referred to vaping as a tobacco product.
Indeed.
In what way is it a tobacco product? Simply the fact that nicotine
contains
in it?
Exactly.
And the nicotine comes from tobacco?
It's a nicotine salt, as far as I understand. I've seen that actually on the Juul website, interestingly enough.
Okay.
These products have nicotine, and I don't believe that there are any of them that are considered completely safe.
Rose, in 2017, the FDA decided to exempt e-cigarettes and e-cigars from agency review for years to come, the result of which was seven health and medical groups, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Cancer, Heart, and Lung Associations, and others, to come together earlier this year to force a reversal, calling the FDA decision unlawful and a harm to public health. But the FDA, on the other hand, has called this an epidemic among kids. So how does the FDA reconcile these two positions?
You know, the role of the FDA in the sort of promulgation of more e-cigarettes has really been at times problematic. you know, e-cigarettes kind of burst onto the market about a decade ago, and there were a lot of public health folks who were worried about what the implications of e-cigarettes meant, and they kept looking to the FDA to come out with some type of statement or position on them. And the FDA really, you know, they wanted more science. They really, you could say that there was an overabundance of caution. And so when they finally acted, it was on the late side. And, you know, sometimes things happen for political reasons. Shock, that, you know, there's politics within healthcare.
Yeah.
But, you know, now we have a new FDA commissioner, Alex Azar, and he's talking, Scott Gottlieb, and he's talking more about, you know, regulating these, and that's actually pretty new rhetoric that's coming out of Washington from the FDA. So these things have, this is really a moving target. It feels like it changes almost every week.
I was shocked to discover when I was reading about this yesterday that there are 465 brands. I don't think that there have ever been 465 brands of cigarettes, but there are 465 brands and 7,760 flavors of these things with sales of about $10 billion. And the industry is, for the most part, unregulated, so we really don't know what's in these compounds that we are vaporizing into our lungs. Is there any other product or products like that in other sectors of the market where we are selling, buying, using substances that we have no clue what's inside them? Rose.
I think you could argue that large parts of the supplements industry exist this way, too, ever since the passage of a congressional bill in, I think it was 1994, that essentially loosened regulations on the supplements industry. There's a lot of things out there that, you know, folks are taking in that have really questionable value, and they're not terribly well regulated. Like, they might be regulated, for example, you know, that their manufacturing facilities are clean, or that, you know, things are sterile as they're being created, but in terms of the actual use and the health effects, that stuff is not as tightly regulated as I think a lot of people would think.
Aside from the popcorn lung doctor that you referenced a minute ago, which you said is reversible, which is an effect that can happen if you vape, and aside from what's happening to the cells in the linings of your blood vessels and in the lining of your mucosal lining in your cheeks, I don't know whether that's reversible or not, but these things have been around since 2003. Do we have any studies that you can point to that say, yep, long-term use of these things are going to cause this? We can point to cancer in cigarettes. We can point to other diseases that come from cigarette smoking. Can we do it yet with vaping, or is it too early?
The answer is it's too early. I do not know of any studies that show long-term effects at this point.
Which leads to Danny's question from Facebook. He says, this is just fear-mongering. Vaping is way better than smoking. I've cut down from smoking significantly. Most doctors agree that vaping is way safer. What would you say to that?
Vaping brings in nicotine, true. It does not bring in some of the other components and the tar and the myriad number of other chemicals that are known to be in regular cigarettes. However, that does not mean that they are benign. They are helping, apparently, some people modify their smoking of traditional cigarettes, but to say that they are totally safe and completely benign is false.
Well, we've done a lot of studies on cigarettes, and we do know, scientists at least know, what chemicals come from smoking tobacco. Do we have any clue of what chemicals are released when you vape? And does how widely does that vary from brand to brand, flavor to flavor?
So,
well, with 400-some brands and, you know, 700-some flavors, that's going to take a lot of study.
Wow.
We do know that the liquid component is primarily made of propylene glycol and vegetable glycerin.
So propylene glycol, isn't that antifreeze?
That is antifreeze.
Great. Well, you'll stay warm in the winter. Do we know what the detrimental health effects are of ingesting propylene glycol? Because it's in a lot of products. I think it's in shampoo.
But the question is ingesting versus inhaling. And so inhaling, we're still studying the effects of of that.
If you inhale something and the product is going into your lungs and therefore into your bloodstream,
that's right.
That's not the same as ingesting. That's just inhaling?
That's not.
So ingesting is eating, going into your stomach.
Going through your stomach, that's correct.
Okay.
There's another issue. Go ahead, Rose.
I was just going to say, you know, you were asking, Mike, about long-term effects of this stuff. We haven't had long-term.
Yeah.
You know, these things have only been around for a decade, and I'd argue that folks have only been using them really for like the past 5-6 years. I pulled up the Surgeon General's initial report, the report of the advisory committee that was published in 1964. And even after 1964, the public health community was amassing just reams of data. But we really didn't get regulation on, like hard regulation on cigarettes until well into the 90s. So I think one of the worries that when I talked to some public health folks was that there was a big lag time and that there were, you know, millions of people who were affected by cigarettes during that lag time between, you know, the early 60s and maybe the mid to late 90s. I mean, remember, I think it was as late as 2007 you could still smoke on the floor of the North Carolina legislature.
Hmm.
So, you know, I think you're looking for long-term results, but we don't even have a long-term yet. And so the question is, are we going to wait another 50 years to see what the long-term effects of vaping are, or I think a lot of the public health folks are wanting to apply a more precautionary principle.
We have 30 seconds left. Maybe this is an unfair question to ask with that time remaining, but if these pods in these vaping devices are tobacco products, why aren't they regulated in the same way that other tobacco products are? Rose.
That's a question that would require more than 30 seconds.
I'll give you a shot
really,
when we come back
really,
from the break.
I mean, the FDA, this is what I was saying, the FDA has hedged. And they've gone one way, they've gone the other, as you've noted, that they've tried they're not really sure yet. You know, they just don't know how.
We have to take a break. We'll come back, and I want to share with you a statement from Juul, one of the principal manufacturer. They're the largest manufacturer of these, and they sent us a statement. I'll share with you in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about vaping and the possible detrimental effects to your body if you should choose to imbibe in that habit, with Dr. Walid El-Talabulsi, a pulmonologist with Trion Medical Partners, Dr. Sandra Burke, a cardiovascular researcher and board member of the American Heart Association, and Rose Hoban, who reports on all this and much more for NC Health News. We invited several retailers and manufacturers to be on the program today, and they were unable to supply us with anybody. We also invited Juul to send a representative. Juul is the biggest manufacturer, the most successful manufacturer. I think they have 3/4 of the market share. And until this morning, they were unable to provide anybody, but they did send us, just before the show started this morning, a statement. It's pretty long. I'm only going to share a part of it, but I'll share a big chunk of it with you. They say, Juul is intended for current adult smokers only. We cannot be more emphatic on this point. No young person or non-nicotine user should ever try Juul. Underage use of Juul and any other vaping products is completely unacceptable to us and is directly opposed to our mission of eliminating cigarettes by offering existing adult smokers a true alternative. We stand committed to working with those who want to keep nicotine products out of the hands of young people. Then they have listed several of their current efforts, and let me just share a few of these with you. Juul says, we have pledged $30 million over the next 3 years to independent research, youth and parent education, and community engagement. They're working closely right now with Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller and the group he assembled, consisting of public health officials and tobacco control experts. Our e-commerce platform utilizes unique ID match and age verification technology to restrict purchases to those 21 and older nationally, and we continue to strengthen our age verification process. We market our products responsibly, following strict guidelines to have material directed toward adult smokers and not to youth audiences. And then they talk about collaborating with eBay, Amazon, and Walmart to remove unauthorized products from their online marketplaces that don't employ age verification. They've launched a print, radio, and digital campaign called What Parents Should Know About Juul, highlighting adult smoker testimonials to reinforce the target consumer. And their packaging includes a prominent nicotine label which reads, "Warning. This product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical," as well as an additional statement, the alternative for adult smokers. It's much longer than that, but that pretty much covers a lot of it. But there is some concern about the advertising. I've never seen a television or heard a radio commercial for cigarette, these electronic cigarettes, but they're out there, and they've been out there for quite a while. These are tobacco products. Why are they allowed to advertise when cigarette advertising was pulled off the air in the 1970s?
Well, as you say, you haven't seen them on television.
But they're there, evidently.
They are indeed. Very often at rock concerts, I understand, there's a lot of advertising and the showing of young people dancing and enjoying their Juul and doing their Juuling.
As we just said, Juul says they do not target young people, and in fact they do everything in their power to dissuade young people from trying it. And they said at the very beginning, nobody who's never tried nicotine should try their product, because their product does, and they're upfront about this, have nicotine in it. Who are they targeting, Rose? What's the general opinion of who they might be targeting with their advertising in all forms? Not just Juul, all the industry itself.
Well, I mean, you ask the industry, they say they're targeting adults. But when you have flavors like mango and strawberry, there's lots of other
bubble gum, caramel, chocolate. Yeah,
there's lots of folks who will say that they are targeting, targeting kids. I mean, I'm not in the studio with you, I'm sitting here in front of my computer. I just pulled up Juul's website, and when you get to it, you have, a box that says, you're not supposed to enter this website unless you're 21 or older. Please verify. I clicked the box, and I'm in the website.
Right.
So yeah. The other thing is, you ask about ads, and I don't know many young people who are actually sitting down and watching TV. They're watching YouTube, and that's where a lot of this stuff is. A lot of the advertisements are on YouTube. Again, I pulled up...
Which is unregulated, unlike broadcast television. It's unregulated.
Correct. And I pulled up YouTube and put Juul into YouTube, and, here's Donnie Vapes with helpful tips and tricks, the last Juul session, Juul starter kit review. So you don't just need TV and radio in order to reach kids these days.
According to the Centers for Disease Control, 3.3% of middle school students and 11.7% of high school students say they have used an e-cigarette, and another study found that many students say they've tried them in part because of the flavors. And we mentioned bubblegum, caramel, chocolate, fruit, mint are just some of the flavors. One brand, Juul, has become so popular among teens that its name has become a verb. Teens now engage in what they call Juuling. What is it about Juul that has made it so popular despite all their efforts to the contrary with young people? Is it simply the nicotine levels in Juul, Doctor?
I don't think it's necessarily the nicotine levels. A study was conducted by the National Institute of Health along with the FDA in 2013 looking at who is smoking why they're smoking for teenagers between the ages of 12 and 17. And the study, among other findings, found that one of the major causes that brings e-cigarette teenagers into smoking is the flavor variety, among other things, including family members that smoke and so on.
What about the fashionable nature of this? I mean, some of these devices are pretty darn cool looking. I mean, they are. And a lot of cigarette smokers will tell you one of the things that they miss if they stop is they don't know what to do with their hands. So this gives you something to do with your hand.
Sure.
How much of it is that?
So that's a possibility. I would tend to say, at least the research seems to be, that the flavor variety, the curiosity was listed among reasons why these teenagers wanted to smoke, and the perception that it's less harmful than tobacco cigarettes.
And so is that an incorrect perception? Would you go on record to say that that is an incorrect perception?
I think the trend in healthcare is to think that that may be what's going to be the final verdict, but I would not go as far as to say that that's okay. What we're going to say.
I'm particularly concerned. Okay, let me go ahead, Rose, and then please jump in. In any case, this is a problem countrywide, but let's talk about right here in North Carolina. The North Carolina Youth Tobacco Survey shows that in the last few years, the use of e-cigarettes in general, not only Juul, but others as well, have increased in middle schoolers by a figure that you will hardly believe, but you can Google it and find it for yourself, by 430%, and high schoolers by 894%. That should give everybody real pause about this issue.
Rose,
I'm very concerned.
I was just about to cite on that same study that they asked the kids their reasons for e-cigarette use, and for middle schoolers, it was 1 in 3 kids said it was because who were using said it was because friends or family used them, and in high schoolers, 1 in 4 of the kids who were using Juul or using e-cigarettes said it was because it was available in flavor.
In October, the FDA raided Juul's headquarters, I'm told, and seized 1,000 documents related to the company's marketing practices. Has anything come of that, Rose?
Well, I think that's what Scott Gottlieb is responding to just this past week, where they're talking about cracking down on the sale of Juul in convenience stores and gas stations across the country. The FDA sent a letter to retailers such as Circle K to say to them that we're going to pull these things off of the shelves because of their concerns about youth marketing. And that's just happening.
And they've been given, back in September, the FDA gave Juul and 4 other companies 2 months, which would put it in November, right now, to prove that they can keep these devices away from minors. Have they released those programs yet, or those plans yet?
I think that's what Juul is trying to say to you in their release, is that this is what they're doing. They just recently announced that $30 million in youth tobacco or youth prevention programming. So, all of this is moving very quickly.
Yeah.
I think that the American Heart Association and a number of other organizations, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, American Cancer Society, American Lung Association, the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, and the Truth Initiative have really initiated some of what's happening now on the FDA level. In August of this year, they sent a letter to Scott Gottlieb, who is, as Rose mentioned, the commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration. And I'll just read this first sentence if you have a moment.
Sure.
We write to bring your attention numerous apparent violations of the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act and the FDA's deeming rule rule prohibiting the marketing without a marketing order from the FDA of electronic cigarette products that were not commercially marketed as of August 8, 2016. It was supposed to have a pre-market order from the FDA in order to market these things after 2016, and none of that has been enforced. Things are now happening on that level.
Meanwhile, Juul, in their release, tells us that we recently removed all product-related content from our social media accounts. We have never used Snapchat, the preferred social media network for younger people. We are aggressively working with social media platforms such as Facebook and Instagram to remove postings and accounts that portray our product in unauthorized and youth-oriented manners. In just 6 months this year, we helped remove more than 8,000 social media postings, more than 450 social media accounts, and they've built a robust secret shopper program to ensure that retailers of Juul are not selling to minors. What would you say if they took all the nicotine out of these products, Doctor? Would that make them less concerning? Let's put it that way. If it was just the aroma and the flavor, no nicotine, zero, what would that do for you?
So that would still leave the vaporized liquid, the propylene glycol, and the vegetable glycerine, for which we still haven't studied enough to make any final conclusions for.
And would you say that if you took all the nicotine out, there would be little incentive for people to buy and use the product? Is that what the principal reason most people are using these products for, as a nicotine delivery device?
I would say for a segment of the population. We discussed the younger population who, as Rose has mentioned, has other family members using and different flavors as other reasons why they're using the electronic cigarettes.
We haven't mentioned one of the other uses that people in certain parts of the country use these for, and you can replace the flavored pods with nicotine and flavorings with ones containing THC oils. Those are the ingredients. That's the ingredient in marijuana that gives you the high. I would imagine that they're not legal in most states, probably are in some where selling them is legal. But I also understand that you can order these pods online. So teens could order these things. Anybody could order these things online. But wouldn't shipping these across state lines be against federal law, Rose? Because marijuana is certainly not legal in the United States, according to the federal government, only in certain states, and there it's questionable.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that activity would be done legally anyway. I think there was an incident down in Fayetteville where a couple of folks ended up in hospital because they tried to replace the liquid in a pod with some, liquid that had either THC and or CBD, and they ended up in the hospital as a result. So, I think a lot of that is still in the hacking phase, is what I'm thinking. We haven't looked as closely at that.
The FDA is going to hold a public hearing next month, December 5th, I believe, to discuss efforts to eliminate youth e-cigarette use using a variety of non-combustible products, e-cigarettes, vapes, vaporizers, hookah pens. I didn't know all this stuff existed, but evidently it does. What, if anything, do you think will come out of this, Dr. Burke?
I do hope one of the things that comes out of it is that we reestablish some of the funding that is dedicated to reducing the use of these products. In 2012, here in North Carolina, we had funding for tobacco cessation and prevention programs to the level of, I believe it was $17 million. It was completely stopped later on. In fact, this year, it's only $500,000. We need to reestablish these funds and do as much as we can to limit this.
Dr. Sandra Burke, cardiovascular researcher, board member of the American Heart Association, in our studio with Dr. Walid El-Tarabulsi, a pulmonologist with Trium Medical Partners, and joining us by phone, Rose Hoban, reporter for North Carolina Health News. Thank you all for the hour. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.